ladies and gentlemen. I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today's Friday, June 9th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
I'm Elodie.
Well, an interesting day in the markets for sure. We had a drop in gold. It started to come back. Kind of losing a little bit of steam here in the last hours of aftermarket trading in the New York spot. You have gold down $10 today, down 10 at 1268. Silver was down 21 cents today at 1730. Platinum was up 1 at 943. And palladium was up 15. Another big day for palladium at 902, up almost another 2%. The USDX today, I'm assuming, is stronger, up by 0.08 at 97.28 as it continues to trade in the aftermarket. And crude oil was up 22 at 45.86. The paper markets today, the tech stocks took a beating. Let me go ahead in the NASDAQ. What happened to it?
And it went down.
Pardon?
It went down.
Well, yes, it did. It took a beating, and it went down after a comment from Goldman Sachs. The move started when Robert Borujerdi, he's Global Chief Investment Officer at Goldman Sachs, warned that low volatility in Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, and Google parent Alphabet may be blinding investors to risks such as regulations and cyclicality. Therefore, you had all of a sudden the S&P Technology Index plunged about 2.7%. So the NASDAQ was down 113 points, and that just came back, I'd say, in the last 15 minutes because it was down over 2%. Heck, right before I connected with Al, and that was just 10 minutes ago. So the NASDAQ down 1.80%, 113 points at 6,207. The S&P didn't really fell, just 2 points at 2437. But the oddball of the three is the Dow was up 87 points at 21,270. So, I haven't seen one of those days in the paper markets in a long time to where they didn't follow suit. And you had such a big spread between the NASDAQ and the Dow as far as the gains and the losses. So that's interesting. It's going to be volatile on Monday, I guarantee you. 10-year yield 2.20%, and the euro was down a little bit after their election, and I believe we're going to talk about that in a little bit. The euro was down 0.07 at 1.12. I guess the pound got hammered a little bit. All based on their election. So interesting markets, a sell-off in the technology, and certainly the big companies like Apple and Amazon and Microsoft. So is that one of the signs? I was watching a video of Jimmy Rogers, the big investor. He was once Soros's partner, and they broke apart. And of course, that was after the big money, I think he left after they made all their money in the drop in the pound, after they shorted the pound so many years ago. But I like Jimmy Rogers. Yeah, he tours the world. He's really an Asian kind of a guy. All his children, he believes the future is in China. All his children have been taught Mandarin. They speak it fluently. And he says he's looking at to the end of the year that you're going to start seeing signs. And he says this is going to be one of the biggest disasters and the worst collapse that any of us has ever experienced. And he's probably in his 70s, mid-70s, maybe even older than that. He says either this year or next, he says you're going to start seeing it unwind. He says he doesn't think it's going to be war. He says, but he thinks that, it's always something that you're not expecting. And he says, you're going to have big companies. He says, just like Lehman Brothers was a 150-year-old company, disappeared. And he says, nobody even knows. No one even speaks about Lehman Brothers anymore. He says, this is the longest expansion, the second longest expansion in our history. And he says, when it goes, it's going to be very bad. And he says, we're all heading for disaster. And he talked about the Federal Reserve a little bit and really didn't add a whole lot of new information there. He says, but, you know, they are the culprits behind it. He says, the Federal Reserve and the central banks have printed up so much money. He says, they're setting us up. He says, nowhere does the Federal Reserve mandate says keep rates low and the stock market high. He says, the mandate was to have a sound monetary policy and good employment. And that doesn't even, you know, well, we know we are. Good employment's not there. And we know we don't have a sound monetary policy. So they strayed off their mandate. And but he is very confident. He says, I've been doing this for a long time. He says, I've never been as confident that we're headed for the disaster. He says, it's nearly 9 years since 2008. We're on the second longest expansion in history. And I thought, well, you know, he, again, he's a big gold buy, you know, gold bug. He was interviewed by Fidelity, which is all paper. So naturally, he just talked about paper. And he said Trump gave Asia to China. He says by pulling out of the TPP, he says that was... He says that was a big deal. He says there might, the TPP might have not been perfect and it should have been perhaps changed, he says. But and he says even in 2008, China had saved money up until that time for the rainy day. And we had that rainy day. They spent all their money, went deeper and deeper in debt. Their debt has, you know, quadrupled, if not more, since 2008. And he says the U.S. is not positioned very well to recover after this happens. He says you'll have some recovery, but he says you're going to have a lot of institutions that just disappear. He says museums, hospitals, universities. He didn't say all of them. He's going to, he says, but you're going to see some big, major businesses and institutions go belly up. And so, again, we've talked about this. We're getting closer, and we've made our little predictions that we were, you know, I was looking for the end of last year, the spring of this year, where we start seeing the cracks. And Jimmy Rogers says, and he says, you know, and it's not going to be, he says, it's not going to be an overnight deal. He says, you'll start seeing, you know, things. He told the guy that was interviewing him, he says, when you see a business that failed, he says, call me. He says, and that'll be the signs. He says, you know, you'll see a couple of businesses that, you know, kind of surprises you that they've gone out of business. And he says that. And, hey, seeing Sears go out of business, if they do, is surprising. Look at the pressures a lot of these retailers have on them. To me, you know, that is one of the signs. And so it was an interesting interview. It was Henry Blodgett, I believe, with Fidelity and Jimmy Rogers. So
there's a bunch of people that are coming out. You can, it's hard to know sometimes. I mean, if you look at one of these videos on YouTube that are in favor of UFOs, then they will deluge you with UFO videos. All right? And if you look at one of these videos that someone says, oh my gosh, the sky is falling, then you'll get a lot more videos on the sky is falling. And it makes it hard sometimes. Are we really looking at a lot of evidence? A lot of people seem to have the opinion that we are on the verge of something very painful. Right? Is that really a consensus opinion among people who really look at these things? Or is it just a fluke of what you view on YouTube? Do you see what I'm saying, Melody?
I do. But
you look for one of them, then you,
you get a dozen
more that
no,
are
I'll
like
tell you
it.
What the flukes
is that
are.
Evidence
no.
that they really are sitting, we're sitting next to the problem?
Or? No, I'll tell you what the flukes are. The flukes are these analysts, newsletter writers, who pick dates, you know, because the Chinese were going to be admitted into the IMF and says that tomorrow your currency is going to be worthless. Those are the flukes. You know, they're basing it on, and yes, we can add up all the leaves and the breeze and the two-by-fours, and they do equal something. I mean, economics is economics. Numbers are numbers. Monetary policy is monetary policies. Debt is debt. So these are all the signs that we know that the system is ready for a collapse. You can't continue with dishing out historical low rates. I mean, it just doesn't work. Look at the debt. I mean, you're the one who talks about the debt all the time. How could that be a fluke?
No, it's not a fluke. I understand that. But what I mean is there seems to be a greater frequency of people that are saying, oh my gosh, the sky really is getting ready to fall. Right? And it's coming from a bunch of people, and you just talked about Jim Rogers for one, but it's coming from a bunch of different sources. And it seems to me that the number of sources has increased. There have been sources saying it for years, but the number of sources seems to be increasing to me. And I'm wondering, is it really increasing, or is it just the way YouTube feeds us videos?
I think it's increasing.
I think it is.
And you have to look at who's doing these predictions and so forth, the consensus. I mean, some of these guys, I wouldn't pay attention. If they told me it was Sunday, I'd believe it was Monday. I mean, I just wouldn't believe anything that they said. But there's a lot of credible, and that's the difference. Knowing who these newsletter writers are and where these predictions and how the consensus is coming from, that we are facing some very difficult times, and it will be a disaster, and it just won't be here in this country. It'll be worldwide.
It'll be kind of a tribulation, and yeah. What I mean by that, I'm not absolutely convinced that it will be a disaster in the sense of, oh my gosh, everything's crashed. I think what Jim Rogers was saying will kind of ease into this thing.
That's what he was saying.
We'll start to see a little bit of trouble. We'll see a little more trouble. We'll get a little more trouble. It'll take a couple of years before we get to bottom. It's not going to happen overnight. And on one level, that's good news. Because if we had the sudden crash and everything just blew up all at once, the result would be a lot of people would die. If we kind of ease into it, we'll be able to adjust to it. We'll be able to adjust, and most of us are going to survive this thing, although we may do it in an impoverished condition. But we will survive. You know, our survival won't be threatened, but our...
I don't think we're going to ease into it. You know, he's living in Shanghai or someplace. I don't think we're going to ease into it. I think what we've been experiencing is the ease into it.
Well, it may be.
And I think what happens is we're going to... when it happens, because of the degree that they have bloated everything, that's what's going to make it just collapse. I mean, I believe, and look how people are acting. I mean, people are, you know, ready to knock your head off if you say something wrong anymore. I mean, you can feel there's tension in this country. And, you know, so no, I don't think it's, you know, it might not be over.
Well, it's two ways to look at it, and I'm inclined.
I've always believed it was going to be overnight, and I think what we're experiencing now is the easing in.
I've been inclined to believe that there would be a collapse. It would be catastrophic, a calamity, and the rest of that. And I've been inclined to believe it would be sudden. But I see Rogers and one or two others that are saying, we've been through these kinds of things before. We've gone into a Great Depression. We've had these kinds of problems. We can deal with them, all right? Just provided that it doesn't happen overnight. If it's overnight, it's going to be big, big trouble.
I believe, I've always said.
Velocity. Some people think it won't work that way. I'm looking at it, and I'm saying that is at least an optimistic perspective, and if they're right, then who knows? We may get through this.
I think we're going to wake up.
Minimum amount of trouble.
Oh, we're going to get through it. I mean, no matter how it happens, but I do believe we're going to wake up one day, and the world's going to be a different place. only because they prevent and they eliminate any, they want to eliminate any type of panic. They want to eliminate any type of things. And I think this is just caught up with them this time. This
yeah, but you know, they can only expansion. Eliminate panic up to a point where finally everybody just starts screaming.
That's what I mean. They can't, and that's why it's going to happen overnight.
You don't eliminate panic. You just kind of bottle it up and hide it and conceal it, but it keeps on building.
And that's
building
what they've been doing. So when you start seeing the breaks, that's when you're going to see the panic, and it is going to happen overnight. And that's how, again, they're not going to do it slow. What, you think they want people to gradually remove their money from the stock markets? Heck no. They want their money. They don't want people to walk away with any of that money that they have in the stock market, in their retirement accounts or anything. Are you kidding me? The country's $20 trillion plus in debts. And they're going to let the people walk away with it before they pay their debt? Uh-uh. So no, it will happen overnight. And I do believe, you know, people think we're going to go into a Mad Max world. Well, you know what? Maybe, maybe not.
In places.
But I believe it might seem that way.
In some communities.
But it does come back.
It may happen, but it won't be universal.
It continues. Life continues. Commerce continues. And after that initial crash that we get and we experience, the overnight thing where things change, then you'll see things, you know, either continue to fall apart or they'll be able to stem it to some degree, and then we'll have to deal with the aftermath. I don't think it's something that, you know, as it's going along, we're going to be deal with certain things, and no, it's going to happen overnight, and then we'll deal with the aftermath afterwards, because it has just been so bloated, so taken beyond the degree of reality, and when it breaks, it's going to break, and it will.
That's one of the problems with manipulation. The government thinks it's clever and powerful because it's been able to manipulate things in a way. It's like the plunge protection team that was initiated by Ronald Reagan. Everybody loves Reagan. He initiated not because he initiated the plunge protection team, but he did start it up. And the idea was to prevent the stock market from going into a sudden collapse. All right, sounds like a good idea. Don't want to have panic. Want to minimize how much is it? We can't let the stock market fall by more than several hundred points. They stop in, and the plunge protection team will prevent that from happening, prevent the panic from catching hold of the whole body politic. Sounds like a good idea, and yet when you stop the panics from happening, you're inevitably just building things up and building things up until when it really does break loose, it's going to be big-time trouble. So on the one hand, government is protecting us on a daily basis, but they're not protecting us on a yearly basis. Sooner or later, we're going to confront that. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Melody and myself, please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
90% silver. Got a call from a client, said someone called him, said, why do you want 90% silver? 90% silver is very important to own in your portfolio. You buy 90% silver because you can get more silver for your money. The premium on the silver is usually less than what you can buy a silver round for or a silver bar. Now, in the years past, since 2008, we saw premiums of 90% silver go from $2 over spot, $3 over spot, $5 over spot, because you couldn't find it. You couldn't get it. It comes from a secondary market. That secondary market is people who own it. And if they need money, they'll sell it into the market, and we have access to it, and we sell it. So when we were going through 2008, nobody was selling their silver, and premiums got very high. I don't sell it. You know, when it's selling for the same premium as a silver eagle, you may as well buy a silver eagle. You know, or you look at your other options. Because depending on the markets, that premium will eventually drop. And then you can pick it up and buy it at the lower level. So 90% silver, 75 cents over spot, is a very inexpensive way, very cost-effective way to buy your silver. And not only that, it's real money. You can spend it in an extreme emergency. And I don't mean going to the store to, you know, pick up your daily coffee.
But cigarettes.
Or cigarettes. And in an extreme emergency, you could still take it to the store and spend it. And that person that you might be bartering with knows that he can take it to the store and spend it. So you're getting real money, and you're getting a very low-cost premium to your silver. That's why it's important to own. And it will always have a value. It will always be recognizable. And it will always be accepted. So all these arguments about 90% silver, I mean, these people should be thrown out of the business. Because they really don't know what they're talking about. So if you don't have any 90% silver, if you want to add to your 90% silver, this is the great little package. I've been doing it all week long. I repriced it today. It did drop a little bit from yesterday, and the price today is $491. That includes your $25 face value, 90% silver. These are quarters. A 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle, and it also includes all your shipping costs for $491. So call us at 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com.
There's an article from the agency French Press. I tried to pronounce it like an Italian, and didn't quite work out right. But in any case, it's referring to the election they had in Britain, and the headline is "Where It Went Wrong for Theresa May." It says Prime Minister Theresa May has suffered one of the most dramatic reversals in recent British political history, losing an overall majority in Parliament in a snap election she had been predicted to win easily. May had called the election on April 18th, urging voters to boost her 17-seat working majority in order to strengthen her hand in the Brexit negotiations. There are five reasons why things went wrong, and they go through a list of problems, and one of them is the Brenda factor. And there was some woman named Brenda who appeared on TV who just sort of flipped out. They were going to have another election, and they've already had a couple of them, and she said, "Not another one. Oh, for God's sakes, I can't stand this." This was a woman named Brenda. Nobody knew who she really was exactly. I mean, I'm sure they knew who she really was, but she was just an ordinary person. And this is one of the reasons why they are calculating that Theresa May lost this election and went from having a 17-seat working majority. Perhaps, I don't know where this wound up, but apparently from the article, it actually, she fell below a working majority on this. So she lost big time on the election that she called. And they have another reason, dementia tax. Her party did something about threatening to take homes away from elderly people to pay for their medical care. They backed down on that, but nevertheless, it caused some problems. Terror attacks. She didn't work. She didn't respond to them the way everyone thought she should. She refused to join a TV debate. All right. And she exposed herself to accusations of political cowardice. And there was her style. And they say May sought to showcase herself as a no-nonsense, get-things-done English woman in the face of a woolly, idealistic Corbyn. That was her adversary in this. But the downsides of this image showed up glaringly on her campaign trail. Her endlessly repeated mantra of a strong and stable leadership grated on many. And the point behind all of this is not so much that Theresa May did something that was technically bad, but she did things that were not politically astute. And that's where this story becomes interesting to me. It really looks as if, you know, people elected Theresa May and they elected Donald Trump. And there have been other elections, I'm sure, where people who are not politicians have been elected to political office because we're sick of the politicians. Well, after we get these non-politicians in there, you have to admit that sometimes these non-politicians are making mistakes and gaffes that we're not used to seeing in our professional politicians. And even the non-politicians, the ordinary people finding themselves elected, it makes you begin to wonder if maybe there's something to be said in favor of the professional politicians. And I hate to say that. That's not an opinion that I want to embrace, but here we are, we're looking at Theresa May. She made a bunch of political mistakes. Not big mistakes, not, you know, the world didn't come to an end. Big Ben didn't stop working. London Bridge didn't collapse. It was a question of attitude on this, and I think this goes to the fact that she was not an effective politician. And we see something like that going on with Trump, and it makes me wonder. Is there actually cause to show some respect to the politicians that most of us, many of us, regard as corrupt and self-serving and treasonous and a bunch of, and yet they managed to keep a lid on things, and the world at least appears momentarily more livable. Do you understand what I'm saying, Melody?
Well, yeah, but you know what? She was 6 years as an interior minister.
Yeah, I know.
So it's not like she didn't have, you know, like she's a newbie to the
deal. Yeah, but that's a bureaucrat. That's a bureaucrat more so than a rank and file politician who's out there.
Yeah, but she still oversaw, she oversaw thousands of budget saving cuts. And she got blamed because of that. She got blamed for the terror attacks in both Manchester and London.
Yeah,
you know?
And that was just like,
I don't think it was her fault, but
from the Democrats saying Comey's going to prove that Trump is doing bad things with Russia. This was political nonsense in many regards.
I don't know if it was political nonsense or was it really the elite and the idea they wanted her out of there.
Well, it may be.
Because of the Brexit
Maybe that's
deal.
What we're just dealing with. It's not so much political gaffe. So we're dealing with the oppression of the elite, bound and determined to discredit anybody who's not, you know, an insider.
Well,
that's what we're looking at.
Brexit is a big deal.
I agree.
And if she resigns, I don't know if they hold another election or he or Corbyn becomes.
I think they hold another election.
They hold another election if she resigns, but he most likely would. I don't know if he would win or not, depending on. But if they get someone who, you know, didn't want the Brexit, I mean, it's
possible they can
really
back out of there.
Yeah,
they can go back into the European Union rather.
Well, no, they would go back into it, but it would be how they would rewrite their relationship with the European Union, and. You know, there might not be any change at all. It'd just be named something new. But so anyway, she did see the Queen this morning. I don't know, you know, the outcome of that. But
no, I don't know either. But it's just maybe it's just evidence of how unstable things are. But it's hard for me to remember a time when the government was not just in our country, but around the world, when the world was more unstable than it appears to be right now. Everything's problems in Greece, problems in Germany, France, Britain, Turkey, Syria, Iraq, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Middle East, North Africa, and here in the United States, and Japan, and Korea. I'm trying to remember, has there been a time when we were more volatile than we are right now?
Usually there has always been an area, a particular area that was having a problem. Maybe two. But you're right, now it's just like everywhere. There isn't anyone that's happy.
Yeah,
you
I know.
They it's like the people are kind of raising their feathers a little bit. The government's trying to, you know, push back, and we have players in this game now that we don't know what they're willing to do. So we're seeing the world, you know, certainly there was a question, and I think you asked the other day about, you know, all the countries, how they're reacting, and you weren't quite sure, and caller said in a lot of these countries, you know, they've been pushed the New World Order on them, and now they're fighting back. They don't want to be part of the New World Order. I don't know if that's
true. What do they want to be part of? It's if we are in a transition mode right now. We're going from something that used to be dominant, not just in this country, but in the world. We're going to something else, maybe. All right, but what are we going to? And do we really want to go there? Are we jumping out of the fire and into the frying pan, or what? Or out of the frying pan and into the fire? What are we going into right now? I was listening to Mark Faber talking. He says nobody knows what this world's going to look like 5 years from now.
I agree,
and I think he's right.
He is,
and I would have to suppose, when was the last time you could say that for the whole world? Nobody really knows what's going to be here 5 years from now. For all of human history, we've had a pretty good idea that whatever's going on today would be going on tomorrow and be going on for another 5 years and 10 years, and probably it would be the same day that when you died as it was when you were born. That was what most of human history was. More recently, things move more rapidly, but just the same. Right now, things are moving so rapidly, and there are so many stresses.
I'm going to point to 2008. I mean, this has been going on before that, but I'm going to point to 2008. I think there has been so much money that has been printed amongst all these central banks, and whether it be by the New World Order, I think all of these countries all jumped on a bandwagon. And I was, hey, and now they want to get off the train, or they want to take over the train,
or they want to blow up the train,
or they want to blow.
They can't make up their mind whether they want to jump off, take control, or burn the whole thing to the ground.
The money is stopping. Even Draghi, European Union, they're not gonna, you know, lower their rates anymore. They're no more quantitative easing. They're gonna, you know, start cutting back on that and so forth. And I think the world has become so stressed that there's no more money in order to keep these countries going. And they all know it. So yeah, now they're fighting. They're fighting, and then they're trying to grasp, you know, whatever they can hold on to.
And find somebody to blame also.
And they'll look for somebody to blame.
Yep.
And it will be, you know, my view, it'll be the U.S. because we were the initiators of it. But you have big players. You've got China. Yeah, they're in debt. They're ready to collapse, but they got a strong military now. You know, you have Russia. You know, say what you might about Russia. I mean, they're strong.
Yeah, I know, and I think they have the mentality to get through just about anything.
I mean, I don't think they're going to want
to... They're not spoiled. They're not a spoiled people, as I understand them. All right, if things get tough, the Russians will deal with it.
And I agree.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I got all excited. I forgot what I was going to say. I agree with you. You often say that to see these countries, that's what Jimmy Rogers says, you see these countries that they're not going to, you know, start World War III with all their nuclear weapons and so forth, and, you know, because it doesn't do them any good whatsoever. Man, but it does. You know, when you think about it, it starts them back, you know, from the beginning. They can, you know, start from scratch. It eliminates populations. You know, because everybody says, oh, they don't want to kill millions of people. Come on! Yes, they do. Yes,
yeah, they
don't
do. Want to kill millions. They want to kill billions.
Billions.
Just a few billion. We've got 7.5.
And you have to remember when these people make their remarks, you look at how they garnered their wealth, and they are still part of the system that they play. So, I mean, that's how they have to view things also. You know, they... you know, that's where they'll continue to make their wealth. But, so they are.
I don't know. The world is just strange. We've said it before, but things are changing rapidly and in a way that has, I mean, clearly seems unpredictable. What really is going on? We've got Jim Rogers saying that end of this year, we're going to start to see the kind that we're going to see evidence of a coming Great Depression. We'll see the evidence from his interview. That's the implication. I don't know. We've got people in positions of power who won't tell us anything like that. They tell us we're going to have 3% growth and whatever. No one seems to know what's going on here for sure. And it does not bode well. There is no consensus. No, and it's not just a question. You know, there's something to be gained, not just if we all agree what's going to happen. If we all know what's going to happen, that's one thing. But even if we all agree what's going to happen, we have a consensus. Okay, that's not so bad. We can maybe work with it. We don't have it. Some people think one thing. Some people think another. Another group thinks a third. It's like the Tower of Babel. So we'll be back to babble a little bit more on financial survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Just one more time.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind listeners the $491 for $25 face value, 90% silver, 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle, includes your shipping costs, $491. So give us, it's still higher than what we initially started this package at. It was $485. And so it has moved up a little bit, even though it's dropped in the past 2 days. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And you know, I'm going to have an additional article in the newsletter this week. And there was just a little, you know, just a comment that talks about being over-indebted, undersaved. It's referencing individuals that what happens, you make these bad decisions and you end up going on promises and products rather than math-based rational plans. It's the same thing with governments. They get over-indebted. There's no money there. And then all of a sudden you have these central banks that are, you know, creating all these other products in order to keep the system moving and the stock markets moving. And everyone is happy in this whole country as long as that stock market is happy, is high. And that's their goal. That's their, but as Al says and what I say, they run out of money.
Well, they make too many promises.
And this is what we've seen, yeah. And bad promises and products. And
we live in a world that's overrun by bad promises, otherwise known as debts. One of the things I stress on a regular basis, talk about on a regular basis in the news publication, that a debt is nothing but a promise to pay.
Yeah.
Right? That's all it is. A debt instrument. A piece of paper. It's a promise to pay. We live in a world where we've made too many promises. The promises can't all be kept. And we have congressmen and senators, in order to get elected, they promise this, that, or the other. And the result is they have what they call unfunded liabilities that may come due here before. So what are they? They are promises to pay. They said, we're going to give you an entitlement. We're going to give you a free lunch. We're going to subsidize your car or your condominium or whatever. But we don't have any money put away to actually keep these promises. And that's where we are. We're in a world of promises. We have 20 trillion promises in the official national debt. Some people say the real national debt's over 200 trillion. Promises, promises, promise, I promise, I promise. This is one of the things that I compare back to gold and silver coins. A gold coin is not a promise to pay. It is a payment. If you have a gold coin in your hand, you have been paid. If you have a piece of paper in your hand, you have not been paid. When you have paper, when you have digital, you have nothing but a promise to pay. Payment is something tangible that you can hold in your hand. And too many promises, too many to possibly be kept, not just in the United States, but globally. And that's what's going to happen. That's where this is going to be. The trouble is going to get serious for people who are elderly, incompetent, dependent, people who can't support themselves, and they have been surviving based to a significant degree on promises. Promise we're going to get you some. We promise we're going to get you some help. We promise we're going to give you some food. And the promises have been kept more or less up until now. We're coming to a time when the promises can't be kept. And if you want to survive, you won't be able to do it easily if you've got a stack of paper promises. It would be better to have real payments, which are gold and silver coin, and other things that are tangible. Right? Payment, not a promise to pay.
Yesterday, I saw an advertisement from one of the local realtors, and he was telling, sell your stocks. Only he was pushing real estate, of course. But it was the first time I think I ever saw a realtor push, sell your stocks. The market's too high. Sell high.
Yeah.
Although real estate's high too. You know, so he doesn't have, I don't know where that argument came from, but he's telling people, get out of the market. And of course, he was pushing property, which, you know, right now, unless you live on it or you work it, wait for it. You know, now's not the time to be buying unless you need a roof over your head. But because I think prices will be dropping, particularly if this is the, which I do believe it will be the worst disaster that this nation has ever faced. So,
at least since the Civil War. Civil War was big trouble and real trouble, but this made, in worst case scenario, it could be comparable.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be worse than the Great Depression.
Absolutely.
Worse than any recessions we've seen.
And you know what? I don't believe the opportunity will be back. People were lucky. Those that invested in the paper markets and in the Dow dropped to 6,000, you were lucky. There, that opportunity came to where you could recapture at least most of your losses. That's not going to happen again.
Yeah.
That won't happen again. So once it's down this next time, it's going to stay down. It'll come back some, but not to the level that it is right now.
Well, it's like the Soviet Union after they collapsed, 1990 or thereabouts. It took them a decade to essentially dig out of the hole of that was created by all the promises that were inherent in communism. They promised to provide homes and food and jobs and prosperity and the rest of it for people. It doesn't work that way. You can't live on promises. You must actually get out and get paid for doing something. You know, it's like they're establishing minimum wage. They want a living wage, right? And some politician in Georgia has, a lady politician, she has caught a certain amount of trouble, elk. Because she dared to say she doesn't believe in a living wage. I don't believe in it either. I mean, from an idealistic perspective, yeah, it's not a bad idea. But I think you need to have jobs where you don't make that much money. It gives you an incentive to work harder and look for a better job. But if they're going to guarantee you enough money, you get a job, McDonald's or wherever. We're going to guarantee you a living wage. You're going to be able to get by. How hard do you have to work? There's going to be a lot of people who just say, hey, this isn't so bad. I don't have to work hard. I don't have to show up on time. I don't have to worry about elevating myself to another, a better job or a higher position in the corporation or the business or whatever. I don't have to do that because I have a living wage. It's guaranteed. I can just sit around and flirt with the waitresses. There is something about the living wage. It sounds like a great idea, but it fails to recognize, you know, human nature. You make the world comfortable enough where people don't have to work, guess what? They won't work. So maybe it's better. It's harsher, and on one level it's not kind, but maybe it's still better to operate on the basis of, look, here's a job. And when you can do this one well, we'll give you another job where you can do that. And if you work that one well, we'll give another one with even higher pay. But
well, it's not only
living
that.
Living wage is a difficult situation.
Yeah, it is, and I agree. We can't better ourselves. But the thing of it is, too, it's the debt that has kept people from, I mean, they get anything they want immediately. So the idea of working and saving for something they might want to purchase in the future, is gone because they get to get it today. You know, with their credit cards, they can go into debt for it today. And they don't worry so much about paying it off. And that's the problem. But
it's part of it. It's part of it.
It's part of the problem.
One of the great blessings of my life is I grew up, my stepfather had his own business, an excavation business. I grew up digging ditches with a shovel, with a backhoe, with a Caterpillar, driving a dump truck, working hard. We ran on the job. You didn't fool around. You had to run on the job. You better not be standing around if there's something to be done. I learned how to work hard as a boy, all right? And that has served me well all of my life. And it was back then, I've seen reports that a quarter of the people in this country were self-employed. They worked hard, and they did okay. But now, thanks to government regulation, and I don't know what all, I don't know where you point all the fingers, very few people are self-employed. They're the ones that will teach their kids how to work hard. And I won't say that I enjoyed the lesson all the time. I mean, it was tough. But still, well, there have been times in my life as an adult where the only thing that got me through was an ability to just work and work and work and work and work until finally the problem was overcome. Not by being smart, not by being wise, none of that sort of thing, not by being rich, just by busting my back and not knowing what else to do. All I knew how to do was just work hard. I mean, I don't mean in all cases, but in there were circumstances I had no other solution to my problem. I do not envy the kids of today. They don't know how to work hard.
No.
Right? They can't even conceive of what I'm talking about. If you put them into circumstances that I lived in, they think they'd died and gone gone to hell. It wasn't that bad. I'm exaggerating to some extent. And there's plenty of good times.
Yeah, but you know what, Al?
But just the same.
Yeah, but Al, there was also, we had more opportunity. And I was, I wanted to leave home. I wanted to live on my own. I wanted to provide for myself. And I had the opportunities to. And yeah, I worked long and hard. I worked a full-time job, I worked a part-time job, I went to school, I did all of these things and still had time. And I didn't have my parents to fall back on. I didn't have, you know, because, you know, my grandparents weren't wealthy, my parents weren't wealthy. I mean, certainly if I needed to borrow $50, they'd let me have it. But I didn't expect them to. I didn't look to them to help me.
Yeah.
And you know, as I got older, we had more of a tendency to help, you know, in my 30s and 40s when we had bad times and good times. Sure, we helped one another as a family and so forth. But being young, you know, in those, you know, mid-20s, I mean, it was, and the kids don't have that today. They have an entitlement mentality,
or at least a lot of them do. I won't say they all do. I don't know what percentage. But more so, when I was a kid, the same thing. If you wanted something, well, go get a job and get it.
Get a job and get it.
Yeah, right. It wasn't that big a deal. Nobody said, oh,
and you know what?
You're entitled. You're entitled.
I didn't have to drive a new car. My first car, my grandparents paid $50 for. It was a Corvair.
Yeah. I had a Corvair at one point.
Yeah. And $50. Mm-hmm. We didn't drive Mercedes and Beamers.
I had a Volvo at one point, paid $75 for it.
Yeah.
There was a hole in the floor on the passenger side.
Yeah.
And I mean, the hole was probably about a foot in diameter.
Yeah.
You could see the road as you were driving. You could look through the windshield or you could look down on the floor.
I guess that's part of, well, the next generation lives better, but, but we're at a point where I talked the other day that, only that 37% of Pew survey, 37% of Americans believe their children will have a better life. 37%. Russia was higher.
Well, they have a worse life to begin with. They may
yeah,
get
but
a
the fair... optimism. It doesn't matter. I mean, they have optimism that their children
well,
will
I agree
do
with
better
that.
Than
I
them.
I agree with that. Yeah. I mean,
so
we,
no, it doesn't matter what you're living.
Which indicates that two-thirds of the people think that things are getting worse. They're not getting better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. All by itself, that has to be a disturbing statistic because it indicates that people are sitting here looking out of the corner of their eyes and wondering, what are we going to do? And they're not just whining and crying. They're waiting to do something that will change circumstances where they can feel optimism also. And Trump was a little bit of an example of this. People voted for Trump because he gave them a kind of optimism. All right, whether that's going to last or not is another story, but they're still here and they're not convinced this is going to be better. The world is going to be a better place. This country is going to be a better place, and they are waiting for someone to lead them. Two-thirds of the population, if you have the right message and you can tell them, look, here's what we can do.
Well, you know what, though, too? I mean, and how much can Trump get done now with all this fiasco? Everybody knows it was an obstruction. Even Jeb Bush. You have, you know, where's the crime? Where, you know, what went on? All this distraction and everything.
Never mind.
Do you think his ability to get things completed, it's going to make it more difficult? And supposedly yesterday, and I don't understand, supposedly yesterday he signed some, I guess it was another executive order, eliminating parts of the Frank Dodd bill. But even his own administration doesn't come out and talk about it. Everybody wanted to know why he wasn't tweeting yesterday during the testimony. Well, you know what? Maybe he should have tweeted something good.
Maybe he broke his tweeter.
But my point is, how much is he going to get? So all that hope now.
Oh, I understand.
I mean, how
that.
Much
we're
do
facing
you think
problems
he's
that
through?
Are too big for an easy solution.
Not much.
We're going to go through the trouble, and in the trouble, in the midst of the trouble, we are going to rise again, and we're going to have to find new ways of doing things. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. Be back next Monday. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you and me and Melody and Todd, our producer. Bye bye. That's too bad.